getting dragged through dragon-infested briars.
"Go ahead," Seth urged Kreia.
"Kendra made it safely to the Zawali Protectorate," Kreia said.
"That's a relief," Tanu murmured gratefully.
"She has learned how the dragons intend to win the war," the eagle announced.
"How did she do that?" Seth asked.
"She met with a sting bulb of Patton Burgess brought to fruition by Raj Farana," the eagle said. "After hearing what she knew from Ronadin, he understood the plan."
"What's the plan?" Calvin asked.
"You know he's here," the eagle checked, looking at the Nipsey.
"Don't mind me," Calvin said. "I have a food hernia."
"He's loyal," Seth said.
"And on my deathbed," Calvin said, "tell my mother I love her."
"An object called the Wizenstone is hidden here at Wormroost," Kreia said.
Tanu started coughing up cobbler and wiped his face with a napkin.
"Did you say the Wizenstone?"
"Yes," Kreia said.
"That should be long gone," Tanu said, shifting uncomfortably. "The stuff of legend. Too powerful to really exist."
"Not according to Patton," Kreia said. "It's inside Stormguard Castle."
Tanu bowed his head.
"Of course it is."
He looked up.
"The dragons know this? Why not just leave it there? How are they ever supposed to get it? Nobody has been inside Stormguard Castle since it was cursed."
"Patton has," Kreia corrected. "Briefly."
"What does he know?" Tanu asked.
"Lethal defensive barriers protect Stormguard Castle all but 4 nights each year," Kreia said.
"The festival nights," Seth guessed. The eagle stretched her wings and ruffled her feathers.
"Yes. On the solstices and equinoxes each year, the castle can be accessed by certain individuals."
"Who?"
Seth asked.
"Let me guess," Tanu said bleakly. "Scraped up potion masters full of cobbler."
"Mortals," Kreia said. "Fair folk. And magical creatures with a human avatar."
"So dragons can enter," Seth said.
"Only in human form," Kreia said. "Magic is stripped from those who enter. The dragons would have to remain in human form. The fair folk would lose any magical talents."
"What about Nipsies?" Calvin asked.
"Any other magical creatures cannot enter," Kreia said. "Only those who can take mortal shape."
"But I'm really small," Calvin said. "These kinds of spells often don't take the especially tiny into account."
"I know only what the sting bulb told us," Kreia said. "Apparently, if the dragons get the Wizenstone, they will win the war easily."
"And they are going after the Wizenstone tomorrow?" Seth said.
"We assume," Kreia said.
"Tomorrow is Midsummer Eve," Lomo noted.
"What if we get it instead?" Seth asked.
"Patton thinks we could use it to win the war," Kreia said.
"This is huge," Seth said. "We were in trouble. We didn't know what the dragons were planning. We didn't know how to approach this fight. Now we have a chance."
"It's better than nothing," Tanu said. "Does Kendra have a plan?"
"To go after the stone tomorrow night," Kreia said. "She hopes you and Seth can help."
"The Zawali Protectorate is a good distance from Stormguard Castle," Tanu said. "How do they hope to arrive?"
"They are currently devising a plan," Kreia said. "Access to the castle does not begin until an hour after sundown."
Tanu scowled.
"That makes it really difficult. We will be unprotected for up to an hour before entering the castle."
"I can't imagine there will be anywhere near the castle to hide for that hour," Calvin said.
"We have to try," Seth said. "If the war depends on this, how do we not try?"
Tanu rubbed his eyes and then ran both hands through his thick hair. "We must try. Meanwhile, I think I know a way to get us to Kendra."
The prison door opened. 2 guards entered, followed by 2 satyrs and 2 children.
"This is our busiest night in ages," the red-haired guard announced.
"There you are!" Nox exclaimed to Seth.
"Eating dinner? Any left for us?"
Seth leaped to his feet.
"Nox? Tess? Newell?
Doran? What the heck are you all doing here?
We were trusted to watch the little ones, Newell said. So, naturally, we've been cast into a foreign dungeon.
The road from Blackwell Keep runs straight to here, Doran added.
We saw some dragons, Nock said. A few came really close to the road.
You drank the milk? Seth asked.
I knew all your VR nonsense had to be a lie, Nock said.
It was the best I could do on short notice, Seth said. How do you like my sanctuary?
Your sanctuary? Nox asked.
Well, I'm the caretaker, Seth said. The guy in charge. Me and Kendra.
Nox gave a scoffing laugh.
Right. That's why you're in a dungeon.
I really am the caretaker, Seth said, looking to the others.
True, Tanu said.
He is, Newell affirmed.
We could have told you that.
Seth and Kendra are the caretakers, Kreia said.
The talking bird, Tess said.
Nice to see you again, Kreia said. I'm a golden eagle.
You must be the worst caretaker ever, Nox said.
That's possible, Seth replied. I haven't been on the job very long, and the dragons have already declared war. And I guess I did end up in a dungeon.
Wait, why are you even at Wormroost?
We came through the barrel, Tess said.
Do Grandma and Grandpa Sorensen know you're here? Seth asked.
They know we're at Wormroost, Nox said. I came without permission. Tess tagged along.
I'm surprised they let you leave the keep, Seth stated. Do they know you came to Terrabel?
We came to save you, Doran said.
You brought Nox and Tess to save me? Seth asked.
They are so new here, they have no clue.
There were reasons, Doran said. There is a murderer loose at the keep. The barrel to Fablehaven is missing and possibly sabotaged, and Tess is our key to roaming free at Wormroost.
Tess pivoted at the waist, swinging her cloak from side to side.
I have my fairy queen robe.
It's actually a cloak of innocence, Newell said. It offers enormous protection if worn by someone new to the sanctuaries who has broken no rules and means no harm.
And you came here without permission, Seth said. Grandma and Grandpa are going to skin you alive.
We had the cloak and we stayed on the road, Nox said.
We had help from the lion bird, Tess said.
We ran into a griffin on the road, Newell said. One of the ones that went looking for you, but was forced out of the sky by dragons. He was heading back to the keep, but he agreed to carry Nox and Tess here.
On foot, of course. Paws and claws, not wings. Doran and I ran.
We're good runners in a pinch, Doran said.
I don't want to do that again soon, Newell said. My sides got sore.
I'm not sure I ever sweated so much, Doran said. Not even when Newell and I play tennis.
I'm glad you got here safely, Tanu said. These are very foolish times to explore the sanctuary.
We weren't exploring, Nox said. We were on a rescue mission.
He looked around.
Where is Kendra?
She's with the talking animals, Seth said.
The eagle can talk, Nox said.
They have a whole territory, Seth said. Kendra is there, and we need to get there. Or I need to get there.
You want to leave this city? Nox asked.
Have you seen the girls? They're almost as pretty as the ones in Texas.
Almost? Seth asked.
Yeah, pretty close, Nox said.
Seth rolled his eyes.
You should stay then. I bet a bunch of them want a 13-year-old boyfriend with a basketball full of fake signatures.
That's okay, Nox said. I want to help get Kendra. My job is only half done.
You're not saving me, Seth said. I'm fine.
In a dungeon is not fine, Nox said. You were lost, and we found you.
And we rode a lion bird, Tess said. It's been a good day.
Seth looked at Tanu.
What do we do?
I have an idea that could get us to the Zawali Protectorate, Tanu said.
How many of us? Seth asked.
As many as want to come, Tanu said.
I'm interested, Lomo said. If we can break out.
Are any of the doors here locked? Seth asked.
The outermost one, Lomo said. Security is lax.
This whole dungeon is weak, Nox said, looking around at the comfortably appointed dining area.
The Fablehaven one looked more legit.
The food is excellent, though, Tanu said, patting his belly.
I'll talk to the chef, Lomo said, rising. He'll prepare some sustenance for you newcomers.
I like how this guy thinks,
Newell said.
Get him on the team,
Doran advised.
Are these cream puffs? Where has this dungeon been all my life?
Newell asked, smelling the cobbler.
Shall I take a message back?
Kreia asked.
No, Tanu said. We'll need you. I must have words with the chef as well. I have a potion to brew.
Chapter 20 Shrunken Chances.
Seth, wake up!
Jolted out of sleep, Seth sat upright with his fists clenched to find a goat standing by his bed. Seth relaxed and stared at the animal through squinty eyes. A quick taste of walrus butter revealed the goat to be Newell.
Scary dream?
The satyr asked.
Tough week, Seth said. Lots of running for my life.
Ready for more?
Newell asked.
Come on.
The satyr left the room. Seth slid out of bed and slipped on his boots. Returning to the dining area, he found Tanu, Lomo, Newell, Doran, Calvin, Kreia, and Nox already there. Nox looked newly awakened, his eyes puffy. He wore his hair short on the sides and longer on top, and right now the longer part was disheveled and matted.
What time is it?
Seth asked.
Maybe an hour before dawn, Lomo said. I did the quick and dirty version, Tanu said, indicating a bowl of beige fluid on the table. It should shrink us, though.
To my size?
Calvin asked hopefully.
A little bigger than you, Tanu said. Strong stuff, though. 3 or 4 inches.
What if the bird just eats us?
Nox said.
I don't eat talking creatures, Kreia said. Ask our rodents.
We can trust Kreia, Lomo said. Her reputation precedes her.
You're coming?
Seth asked Nox.
Sounds like you need all the help you can get,
Nox said.
Are you an expert with cursed castles?
Seth asked.
Are you an expert dragon fighter?
Nox countered.
I killed one with Kendra,
Seth said.
Really?
Nox asked, surprised.
A poison one, Seth said.
Well, maybe you have some experience, but you had to start someplace, Nox said.
True, Seth said. Do you get that you might die? We all might.
Not me and Newell, Doran said. If magical folk can't enter the castle, no use in us tagging along. We'll watch Tess.
Keep her safe through Midsummer Eve, Seth said.
Newell winked.
We'll hole up here. Eat dungeon chow.
I might try for a life sentence, Doran said, patting his belly. You may get in some real trouble if Dalgarel determines you helped me escape, Lomo said.
We'll play dumb, Newell said.
It's a specialty, Doran added.
Anyway, I'm in, Nox said to Seth. If you can take this risk, so can I.
Seth shrugged.
Your funeral.
The brew I made will shrink our clothes, Tanu said, but no items, and no magical clothing, and certainly no magical items.
My clothes didn't shrink last time I used a shrinking potion, Seth said.
Tiny naked Seth breath,
Nox said with a smirk.
It's more complicated to get the clothes to shrink, Tanu said, but I had dragon parts to work with. Superior ingredients.
My sword? Seth asked. It could be useful.
Tanu held up 2 small drawstring bags.
Kreia is our ride to the Zawali Protectorate. She will carry 2 bags.
He held up 1.
This one is normal. We'll ride in it.
He held up the other.
This one was just loaned to me by Lord Dalgarel. It's an extra-dimensional bag.
Like the knapsack we used to have?
Seth asked.
Yes, Tanu said. The inside of this little bag is the size of a large trunk. We can bring anything that will fit through the mouth.
Seth retrieved his sword and the vial of horrors and put them inside the magical bag. He removed his fleet boots and stuffed them in as well.
They're magical, he explained.
Lomo added a sword.
I already included some of my gear, Tanu said. Lord Dalgarel reluctantly let me store many of the dragon parts I collected in an ice house here.
Won't the bag be heavy with all that stuff inside? Nox asked.
Doesn't work that way, Tanu said, handing Nox the bag. The little bag still feels empty. All the bag actually contains is a small gateway to a pocket dimension.
This breaks the laws of nature, Nox said, reaching his arm deep inside the tiny bag.
It enhances the laws of nature, Tanu replied. Makes clever use of them.
Nox handed the bag back to Tanu. The goo in that bowl will actually shrink us?
No time like the present to find out, Tanu said. Might be wise to use the cover of night while it lasts.
How much must we drink? Lomo asked. You're with us? Seth asked.
This problem is bigger than all of us, Lomo said. The fair folk won't like it, and they can disavow me if they must, but I can't withhold my help.
This is a potent batch, Tanu said, producing a measuring cup. A quarter cup should do it.
He dipped the cup in the bowl.
Who wants first try?
Seth intended to volunteer, but Lomo beat him to it. The man took the cup from Tanu and downed it. Over a matter of seconds, his body diminished in size until he was no bigger than Seth's pointer finger. His clothing shrank with him. The measuring cup sat on the floor beside him. Tanu picked up the measuring cup, refilled it, and handed it to Nox, who stared suspiciously at the gooey fluid.
What's in this stuff?
You probably don't want to know, Tanu said.
Camel snot, Seth said. Oyster slime, dragon sweat. It's sort of a chowder.
Must be where you get your Seth breath, Nox said, drinking it down.
Not bad, he said as he started to shrink.
Not good either.
His voice sounded higher as he got smaller.
Nox dropped the measuring cup, and soon he stood beside Lomo on the floor. Seth retrieved the measuring cup and handed it to Tanu.
Any word about Eve? Seth asked.
She is basically a prisoner in her room, Tanu said. Lord Dalgarel was not happy with her.
He gave the cup back to Seth.
Down the hatch, Seth said, tipping the cup back.
The creamy fluid tasted like a mix of sweet and salty with a grainy texture. Seth tried to banish thoughts of camel snot as he gulped it down. He quickly set the cup on the table once he was done. Tingles sparked through his limbs as the table went from the height of his waist to eye level to a towering structure high above him. Tanu and the satyrs looked like giants.
Let's get you on the table, Tanu said, crouching.
Seth, Lomo, and Nox climbed onto his large brown hand. It felt like an amusement park ride as Tanu lifted them to the dizzying heights of the table and let them hop off his palm. At their normal sizes, Lomo was taller than Seth, and Nox was a bit shorter. Their sizes relative to one another remained the same.
"Hi, Seth," Calvin said from a little farther down the table.
"Hey, Calvin," Seth said.
The Nipsey ran to him, and Seth found that the young adult came up to his chest.
"We still don't quite match up," Calvin said. "But closer than before."
Tanu sat on the edge of the table and drank a quarter cup of the potion. He promptly shrank, still sitting on the edge of the table. He got up and hustled to the others.
"Your turn, Newell!"
Tanu called. Newell brought the regular drawstring bag, opened it, and let them climb inside. Seth quickly discovered that it was not comfortable to sit at the bottom of a bag with four other people.
"This is how we're traveling?" Nox complained as he jostled against Seth.
"No," Tanu said. "Soon we'll be dangling from an eagle's talons hundreds of feet above the ground."
"I will carry you true,"
Kreia said, her voice coming from somewhere above the bag.
"I slip by dragons all the time. I got here just fine."
"Keep silent," Newell told the inhabitants of the bag. "I have the eagle and am heading out."
Seth could see nothing from inside the bag. The opening was closed tight. Newell carried them some distance,
then stopped as he spoke to some unseen person. "I'm bringing the eagle out," the satyr said. "Kreia has to get home." A door opened. Newell walked some more.
"We're out," Lomo whispered.
Seth sat in silence, swaying in the bag with his friends. Newell paused again.
"Good luck,"
the satyr whispered. Seth's stomach lurched as the bag soared upward. The acceleration drove the occupants of the sack into each other. For a brief while, Seth had most of Tanu on top of him until the Samoan shifted.
"We're away," Kreia announced. "Best to keep quiet. Some predators have excellent hearing."
As they reached a steady speed, the bag leveled out, swaying gently. Sometimes the eagle ascended or dipped down or turned, making the bag swing one way or another. Invisible forces tugged at Seth in unpredictable ways. It was difficult to rest. He waited and listened, wondering if a dragon would spot them. After some time, Nox asked in a loud whisper,
"How do we get big again?"
"It'll wear off,"
Seth whispered back.
"What if it wears off while we're flying?"
Nox asked.
"We have enough time," Tanu said. "At least 90 minutes.
Seth waited in the wobbly darkness. The air got stale and took on the slightly humid odor of multiple bodies. Seth tried to relax and let time go by. He tried to appreciate the fact that they were not being attacked by anything.
"We're over the Zawali Protectorate now,"
Kreia finally announced.
"Feel free to speak."
"Calvin, is this how you feel in my pocket?" Seth asked.
"A little," Calvin said. "But your pocket is more stable, and I'm alone. Also, I can sometimes stick my head out for air."
"I'm sorry," Seth said. "This gets old."
"You see why I sometimes want to get out and stretch my legs," Calvin said.
"The smell in here," Nox said. "I keep trying to hold my breath. It backfires because then I breathe deeper afterwards."
"Slow and steady," Tanu suggested.
"On the bright side, I may never be part of a stranger jailbreak," Lomo said.
Everyone laughed.
3 inches tall, dangling from an eagle in a little sack?" Tanu asked.
They laughed again.
"Here we are," Kreia announced. "Shelter. We beat the sunrise, not by much."
The bag came to rest on a hard surface. Fingers pulled open the top, and Seth stared up into the face of an enormous chimpanzee before the bag slumped sideways and he crawled out. Seth found himself on the floor of a gigantic stable or barn. The air smelled fresh compared to the stuffy sack, although there were definite odors of animals and hay. Gargantuan animals surrounded them. At his current size, Seth thought the immense animals seemed significantly larger than the dragons. The chimpanzee stood nearest. Kreia had alighted on a perch high above them. Seth also saw a huge tiger, a buffalo, a pair of wolves, a camel, a horse, a vulture, some rabbits, and a bear, most looming like colossal monuments. He had never felt tinier.
"Can they all talk?" Nox asked.
"Welcome to shelter," the tiger said. "I am Raj Farana, guardian of the Zawali Protectorate. We expected Kreia to return with information, not passengers. Most ingenious. One of you is Seth Sorensen?"
"That's me,"
Seth said, waving up at the gigantic tiger. It seemed unlikely that such an immense beast would hear or notice him.
"Kreia said my sister Kendra is here. Can I see her?"
"Your sister is currently resting," Raj said. "You are most welcome here."
"Does she have a plan?"
Seth asked.
"We'll get to that in due time," Raj said. "The Sting Bulb of Patton is out doing reconnaissance. A very agreeable man."
"I'm excited to see him," Seth said.
"Nobody will eat us, right?" Nox asked.
"Humans can be so fearful of animals,"
the chimpanzee said in an educated accent. She scratched her head.
Do you know what predator hunts the most species in this room?
People, Seth said. The chimp tapped her nose and pointed at him.
People hunt all of us for food, for decoration, for sport. Some of us are poisoned like vermin. Others are enslaved or used in experiments. Once we could roam the wide world, our only limit the division between earth and sky. Now we cower where we can, our options ever shrinking, bordered by humanity on all sides. Who should be afraid of whom?
We're tiny, Nock said.
I see, the chimp said. You're currently vulnerable. You worry about vengeance. Or perhaps you realize that weaponless, even a full-grown man, is no match for a tiger. Take solace that if you perish, your species will be just fine. Not many mammals number in the billions. Those who do tend to be rodents or domestic animals like cattle or sheep. Some species of animal, including tigers, are down to the thousands, or even the dozens. Some of us are no more.
You're in no danger, human, the bear said. None of us eat other creatures who can speak. Is this the proper time for activism, Tasha?
It's always the right time for positive messages, the chimp replied.
Remain here until you regain your size, Raj said. The shelter is a safe place for all creatures, great and small. There will be time for plans soon enough.
Thank you for your hospitality, Tanu said with a bow.
I won't be growing like the others, Calvin said. Don't be disappointed. I'm a Nipsey.
You are all welcome here, Raj assured them.
Nock stretched. I'm going to get some sleep. Seth nodded. Tomorrow could be a long night. Wake me when Kendra gets up. Or if we're going to eat. Or if dragons attack.
Chapter 21 Preparations. Kendra awoke to a juicy tongue sliding across her cheek. She started with a little shriek.
Sorry, Sherman the fox said. I wasn't sure the best way to wake you up.
Sitting up, Kendra rubbed her cheek dry.
You startled me. I wasn't trying to be rude, Sherman said. The licking is something foxes do. I wasn't tasting you, I promise.
Is Patton back? Kendra asked.
Not yet, Sherman said. I hear he is on his way, but you have other visitors.
Kendra exited the stall where she had been sleeping to find Tanu, Seth, Nox, and a handsome stranger sitting around a wooden counter eating scrambled eggs and drinking milk.
Seth! Kendra cried. Tanu? What are you doing here? Nox? Am I still sleeping?
Seth ran to his sister and gave her a hug.
I was worried about you.
Just because a dragon gobbled me up? Kendra asked.
I thought you had been eaten, Seth said.
There are more comfortable ways to travel, Kendra replied. I got spat out in front of Celebrant.
How did you get here?
Tempest found us, and even I made it to Terrabel, Seth said. The Somber Knight helped Tanu get there with his bull.
The Somber Knight survived? Kendra asked.
Barely, Seth said. He lost limbs and his bull got all torn up. We met Lomo in Terrabel. Do you remember hearing about him? The rebel of the fair folk who wanted them to get involved.
He was locked in the dungeon, Kendra said.
Hello, Lomo said with a wave. Tanu made a shrinking potion, and we escaped with Kreia, Seth said. We know about the Wizen Stone. We're here to help.
And Nox? Kendra asked.
I snuck to Wormroost through the barrel, Nox said. He briefly explained how the murder of the goblin and loss of the barrel had caused a breach in security. I heard you and Seth went missing, so I went exploring with Newell and Doran, and we found Seth.
You shouldn't be here, Kendra told her cousin. You have no idea how dangerous this is.
I drank the milk, Nock said. Tanu gave us some walrus butter from his supplies this morning. Same effect.
It's not just drinking the milk, Kendra said.
You can't know how dangerous this castle will be.
Neither can you, Nox said.
At least we have some experience, Kendra said.
Did you have experience the first time? Nox asked.
This is my second attempt to save Wormroost. The first time I saved it without even knowing what I was doing.
He's determined, Seth said.
This is life and death, Kendra said. Emphasis on death. We've had friends die.
I get it, Nox said. Riding a dirt bike is life and death, too. I'm in.
Kendra did not understand that mentality. Death was so final, so permanent. But she knew Seth sometimes had similar feelings.
Tasha made me breakfast? She asked. Yeah, the chimp, Seth said. Talking hens still lay eggs.
The apes are good cooks, Gorbin said. Excellent omelets.
You made it here, Kendra cried, walking over to give the bear a hug. Seth, have you met Gorbin? He found me when I crossed into the Zawali Protectorate and helped bring me here.
Most of the animals don't like cooked meals, Gorbin said. I appreciate variety.
I see you have a manacle on your ankle, Calvin said. I'm handy at picking logs.
Kendra put her foot beside the Nipsey, and he slipped his sword into the keyhole. A moment later, the manacle clicked open. Thanks, Kendra said.
What are friends for?
Calvin replied, sheathing his slender blade.
Did you see who else is here? Seth asked, indicating some horses.
Glory! Kendra exclaimed. And Noble, how did you find us? She rushed over to her saddled mount and hugged the horse's neck. Then she patted Noble.
Some Luvians form a bond with their rider, a female horse said. Glory formed one with you, Kendra. When her keepers turned her loose to find you, she was just supposed to run the road to Skyhold. But she sensed when you came here, and it was closer for her. Noble arrived with her late in the night.
Good girl, Kendra said, petting Glory. I'm so happy you found me.
Come have some eggs before they get cold, Tanu called. You need energy.
Kendra went and obediently finished off the warm, salty eggs. Then she downed a creamy glass of milk.
Tonight is Midsummer Eve, Seth said. Do we have a plan?
I think so, Kendra said. Patton must still be out investigating. We need to get to Stormguard Castle an hour after sundown. We have to time it right, or we will be stranded outside on a festival night.
What's so terrible about a festival night? Nox asked.
Most of the rules and boundaries at a preserve break down on festival nights, Kendra said. The creatures run wild. It's bad at Fablehaven, and it's supposed to be worse here.
Better for us to arrive to the castle a little late than early, Seth said. We don't want to be stranded in the open.
But not too late, Kendra said, or we miss time finding the Wizenstone.
I could brew another shrinking potion, Tanu said. I brought enough ingredients.
He pointed to a drawstring bag on the table. It's tiny, Kendra said.
It's like our old knapsack, Seth said. Bigger inside.
Think you could fly us there in the bag? Tanu asked Kreia.
On Midsummer Eve, the eagle checked. It would be suicide.
No birds fly on Midsummer Eve. The sky phantoms alone are plenty of reason to stay grounded.
A dove swooped through the shelter entrance and alighted on a perch.
Patton is almost here, he announced.
He'll have our plan, Kendra said.
I can get behind whatever Patton wants, Seth said.
They heard approaching hoofbeats, and then Patton rode through the entrance on Captain. Seth ran over to him. Patton laughed as he smoothly dismounted and gave Seth a big hug. Captain and Glory touched muzzles. Patton released the embrace and stepped back, appraising Seth.
You're getting taller.
I guess, Seth said. It's so good to see you.
Patton raised both hands.
Full disclosure, you are giving all of this affection to a mutated piece of fruit. I'm just Patton's sting bulb.
I'll degenerate into mush in a couple days.
You're better than a photo, Seth said.
That much is true, Patton said. He looked to the others. Hi, Tanu. Good to see you. And Lomo, too?
Patton helped encourage my sentiments against neutrality, Lomo said.
You finally went for it? Patton asked.
I did, Lomo said. Escaped prison at Terrabel to come here.
Good man, Patton said. Who is the new kid?
Our cousin Knox, Kendra said.
Patton smiled. Bringing in more family?
He's on Mom's side of the family, Seth clarified.
Welcome, Knox, Patton said. You picked one tumultuous day to meet up with this crew. Who am I missing?
Me! Shouted Calvin. The tiny one!
What the devil are you? Patton asked. You're too big to be a Nipsey.
I'm a giant Nipsey, Calvin said, under a spell. Sworn to Seth.
Good choice, little fellow, Patton said. Seth is one of the best. You may not be able to enter Stormguard Castle, though.
Sometimes spells miss people smaller than fairies, Calvin said. We get forgotten a lot.
It's quite a curse on that castle, Patton said. But anything is possible. Your help is welcome. I won't be able to enter either.
You won't? Seth asked.
I'm vegetable, not animal, Patton said. Not really a person. But I'll help you get there.
You have the plan worked out? Kendra asked.
It's a go, Patton said. Best I could manage on short notice.
What are we doing? Seth asked.
Going to meet a fairy named Risen May, Patton said.
A fairy? Knox asked.
No typical fairy, Patton said. One of the greater fairies. Kind of like a queen bee.
Is she a unicorn, like the fairy queen? Kendra asked.
No, Risen May is a true fairy, Patton said. Larger than normal. She has powers that will help us tonight.
What powers? Seth asked.
I can't say, Patton replied.
Is it a secret? Kendra asked.
Well, yes, Patton said. But I can't reveal it, no matter how much I want to. My lips are sealed by magic. It is part of the price of bargaining with Risen May.
But she can help us get to Stormguard Castle at the right time, Tanu verified.
Exactly, Patton said. Literally couldn't have said it better myself.
She lives in the Zawali Protectorate? Seth asked.
Patton shook his head. Outside, in the Bewilderness.
That sounds made up, Knox said.
It's a dangerous region, Patton said. Mostly forested. No dragons go there.
Does it adjoin the Zawali Protectorate? Seth asked.
No, but the Bewilderness is on the border of the Sentient Wood, which can be reached by a tunnel from the Protectorate, Patton said. We'll all want to bring mounts.
The Sentient Wood can be entered only with permission, an owl said from a perch.
I just got the permission, Patton said. One of the wooden henchmen owed me a favor.
Wooden henchmen? Knox asked.
Woodlings, Patton said. I'll explain on the way. Everyone needs a mount, he repeated.
I'll go with Glory, Kendra said.
Glory bobbed her head, then nuzzled Kendra as she drew near.
Noble is good for me, Seth said.
Noble stamped in agreement.
I'll stick with Captain, Patton said. We need three more mounts.
I'll take the big one,
a large chestnut mare said.
I'm Charlemagne.
Tanu approached and introduced himself.
I'm Rodolfo,
said a gray stallion with a black mane and tail.
It would be my pleasure to carry Lomo. I'll take the other boy,
a Bactrian camel offered.
Whoa,
Knox said. Are you fast?
I'm excellent over long distances,
the camel said. Do I sit between the humps? Knox asked.
Precisely,
the camel said, kneeling down.
Call me Babak.
Knox.
Short for obnoxious, Seth said.
And Seth is short for Seth Breath of Death, Knox said.
Do I need a mount? Calvin asked. I usually just ride in Seth's pocket.
A mount would be sensible, Patton said. Maybe not at first, but all will come clear before the day is out.
A male rabbit cleared his throat.
I may have trouble keeping up with horses, but it would be my honor.
Calvin brightened.
I was talking with Thistleton before breakfast. He'd be great!
We can carry the rabbit most of the way, Patton said.
Deal, Thistleton agreed, hopping over to Captain. I've never ridden a horse before.
Kendra mounted Glory and patted her neck. Patton scooped up Thistleton and leaped onto Captain.
Would you like an escort?
Raj Farana asked.
Just send word to the other animals to watch out for us, Patton said. We ride for the secret tunnel to the sentient wood.
Thanks for your hospitality, Kendra said.
Thank you for your courage against the dragons, Raj replied.
Bye, Gorbin, Kendra said. Bye, Sherman.
The bear and the fox bade her farewell.
Off we go,
Patton said. He and Captain led the others out of shelter. They rode together under the morning light.
So, what is the sentient wood? Seth asked.
Like it sounds, the trees are intelligent, Patton said. Much more conscious than most trees. Anything made from their wood comes to life.
Can dragons attack us there? Tanu asked.
There is a powerful barrier around the wood, Patton said. Not even caretakers can enter without permission.
But you got permission, Nock said.
I once helped one of their henchmen out of a tight fix, Patton said. Trees remember.
Then the bewilderness, Kendra said.
Yes, Patton replied. It will be dangerous.
What else is new? Seth said.
It's a risk worth taking, Patton said. If we can find Risen May before sundown, our chances of making it to Stormguard Castle on time improve markedly.
Then we should pick up the pace, Babak said.
Kendra held on as Glory increased her pace to an easy lope. The other mounts did likewise. Chapter 22 The Sentient Wood. The sun was almost directly overhead when Captain came to a stop in front of a large gate in the side of a hillock. Beyond the gate, a tunnel slanted downward. Seth and the others halted alongside him.
Back already?
Asked a whispery voice that startled Seth. He turned to find a snake leaning out of a dying tree with spindly branches. The serpent was doing a good job of blending with the wooden limbs.
I brought my friends, Patton said. Meet Samba, the boomslang.
Seth and the others greeted the snake. Patton dismounted and opened the gate.
We're ready to leave the Protectorate. No trouble today?
No trouble ever, the boomslang said. A guard is not really needed on this end, but I like the area for my own purposes, so I keep watch. The only beings with access from the other side are the woodlings and a few hamadryads.
Are you poisonous? Nox asked.
My bite can kill, Samba said. We all have our ways to survive.
Any tips on crossing the sentient wood? Patton asked.
Show no weapons that could harm trees, Samba said. Hide axes or hatchets for sure.
What about beavers?
Babak asked.
We keep the beavers and woodpeckers far from view of the sentient wood, Samba said. Out of respect for our neighbors, no trees are felled in this part of the Protectorate. No wood is burned.
Patton remounted Captain.
We'll treat the sentient wood with respect.
Do whatever you wish, the boomslang said. What is it to me? However, if you can scare some small game in my direction, the kind who do not speak, I would be most obliged.
Some of us do not eat other animals, Charlemagne said.
How you get so large eating hay is a mystery the universe may never unravel, the boomslang said. Do not act superior for consuming weeds. What cunning does that require?
You know better than to cross words with a serpent, Captain said. Don't keep arguing, or we'll be here all day.
Yes, the boomslang said. Why think? Why engage?
Better to mindlessly trot off where your riders direct you.
We have a purpose in... Charlemagne began.
Don't,
Captain cut her off.
All day.
Captain led the group through the iron gate and into the large tunnel. The way was wide enough for them to ride two by two. After they were all through, Patton dismounted again and closed the gate.
Hay is not a weed, Charlemagne grumbled. Neither are oats or carrots.
Seth could sit tall in his saddle as the earthy tunnel slanted downward. Here and there, Patton had to crouch a little. The soil around them smelled freshly dug, but Seth supposed that was not likely. Before they had gone far, the tunnel leveled out. Tanu switched on a flashlight. They continued underground much longer than Seth had expected.
Camels do not belong underground,
Babak said after some time.
Neither do horses, Captain replied, but we do what we must in emergencies. Be grateful the passage accommodates us.
Rabbits quite like it below ground, Thistleton said, but this tunnel is not very cozy.
Eventually the tunnel began to slant upward, and daylight came into view ahead. Tanu switched off his flashlight as the tunnel ended at a gate manned by a wooden figure exquisitely carved to resemble a bearded gentleman. The wooden man held up a hand, and they all stopped.
"Greetings," Patton said, waving. "I have returned with my friends."
He gestured at the others, then motioned toward the gate and walked the fingers of one hand across the palm of the other.
"You granted permission earlier for us to cross the sentient wood on our way to the Bewilderness."
The wooden gentleman gave a nod and opened the gate, standing aside to let them pass. Seth stared at the wooden man as he rode by, and the man appeared to stare back.
"Do they talk?" Knox asked. "The wooden people?" "I have never heard them speak," Patton said, "nor the trees. I'm not sure how well they hear either. Pantomime seems to help them understand."
Seth rode forward into the noonday twilight of a forest full of tall trees, none of them crowded together, but rather spaced just right for their branches to block out all but a few patches of sky. The variety of trees struck Seth, towering conifers with deep grooves in the bark, mighty oaks with twisty sprawling branches, bushy cypresses, maples with their broad, shapely leaves, the fat trunks of banyans with rambling roots, and various tropical trees that looked like they belonged in a steamy jungle. No undergrowth obscured the ground between the trunks. The road ahead was discernible only because it was the sole line of sight that did not end with a tree.
"I feel like we're being watched," Kendra said as they followed Patton forward.
"Maybe not watched," Patton said, "but definitely noticed."
"How can you tell the trees are smart?" Knox asked. "They just look like trees."
"Well, anything made from their wood comes to life," Patton said.
"That's where the wooden people come from?" Seth asked.
"Exactly," Patton said. "The wooden henchmen are controlled by the trees. They act on behalf of their masters."
"Who made the first wooden person?" Seth asked.
"I don't know," Patton said. "My guess would be a dryad or a hamadryad. Now the woodlings make each other, according to the desires of the forest."
"They must have axes," Knox said.
"I suspect they have some tools," Patton said, "but let's not discuss it any more right now. I'm getting the feeling that we're being too noisy."
"There is a hush," Charlemagne said in a quiet voice. "No animal sounds."
As they fell silent, Seth could not help sensing the unusual stillness around him. He kept wanting to glance around to see who was spying on him. He felt observed from all directions, but wherever he looked, it was just more trees. At first, only the footfalls of their mounts disturbed the silence. As they advanced, the more Seth paid attention, the more he noticed strange creaks and groans issuing from the trees, branches shifting or swaying with no discernible wind. There was a way trees normally sounded in a breeze, and this was different. The forest seemed to murmur.
Over there,
Kendra whispered.
Woodlings,
Patton said. Off to the right, Seth saw a huge barrel with legs walking along with two wooden figures. The figures were humanoid, but not carved in detail like the bearded man at the gate. As Seth watched, the barrel paused, and one woodling turned a spigot in the side of the barrel to fill a bucket. The other figure knelt by a knobby tree with a trowel, carefully digging near a root. The figure with the bucket went and started pouring water near a tall elm. As they progressed through the woods, Seth caught sight of other woodlings ranging between 3 and 8 feet in height. Some appeared to be weeding. Others were caring for the trees directly. They paused at one point as Patton looked around.
I don't want to lose the path, he muttered softly. This appears to be a crossroads.
How can you tell?
Knox asked.
I see a couple of directions in which the way is devoid of trees, Patton said. These paths do not curve much.
What's the problem?
Knox asked.
We have been generally heading north, which is the direction we desire, Patton said. The pathways here appear to run only east, west, and back south, the way we came.
Flip a coin? Seth asked.
West veers gently north, Patton said. We'll try that way and hope for the best.
I'm thirsty,
Babbick said. Seth looked back at him.
Kidding, Babbick said. Camel humor.
They went a good distance before Patton stopped again.
This time we can go directly north again.
They had not gone far before an enormous wooden figure came into view. Astride his horse, Seth came slightly higher than the waist of the wooden giant. It looked sturdily built, though the face and carved details were rather primitive. It held up a crooked hand for them to stop.
We're here with permission, Patton said,
accompanying his words with hand signals.
Just passing through. Treading lightly.
The giant pointed off to one side and motioned for them to come.
We're going north,
Patton said, indicating the way ahead. The giant shook its head and pointed off to the side once more. Patton looked back at the others.
It appears we're heading east for now.
He gestured to the east and said,
Lead on.
The wooden giant began plodding forward. The way twisted and turned, making Seth wonder if this was a path or if the giant was simply improvising a route among the trees. Seth began to notice an increasing number of woodlings. For the first time, the woodlings were noticing them as well. As Seth and the little caravan of riders went by, the wooden figures would come in their direction and follow behind.
They're following us,
Knox quietly said out of the side of his mouth.
Are we in trouble?
Kendra wondered.
We'll sort it out, Patton said.
Seth kept glancing back. A dozen woodlings expanded to a score. Most were humanoid figures, but a few walking barrels joined the parade as well. Up ahead, the giant led them into a clearing. A single enormous oak tree awaited, the trunk rivaling a sequoia, contorted branches spreading across lofty heights. A mob of woodlings surrounded it, tall and stumpy, intricate and plain, though none were as large as the giant guide.
What is going on?
Seth mumbled. The giant brought the group to a halt not far from the base of the tree. Woodlings crowded around them. Seth hoped that if things went bad, they could make a run for it. A fight would probably not end well. A tall, slender woman came around from the far side of the tree, her gown an artful collage of green leaves, her shawl a masterpiece of silken spider webs. In her bare feet, she stood almost as tall as Patton on his horse.
Are you the Hamadryad of this tree?
Kendra asked. The woman smiled, as if to confirm the guess. Then she looked at the woodlings and motioned them away.
Give our visitors some space, she said in a soothing voice.
She should play basketball,
Nox murmured. Seldom do visitors cross our land, the Hamadryad said. I am Eldenor, a servant of this grove. Your courtesy has been appreciated. We ask of you a favor.
I bet she could dunk without jumping,
Nox muttered.
Seth motioned for his cousin to zip it.
How can we be of service?
Patton asked. Woods like ours have dwindled, Eldenor said. Pray, take these seeds and plant them where they might thrive.
She held out to Patton a bowl made of stone.
Oak, redwood, and banyan, he said.
Not together, she advised. Far from here. Some of the elders worried that our enclosed populations pose a threat to ruminating forests. A single disaster could eradicate so many.
It would be our pleasure, Patton said.
You come from a tree,
Eldenor observed.
Indeed I do, Patton replied. I took human form for a brief while.
You chose an excellent human,
Eldenor said.
Safe journey.
Might I ask, what is the best route to the Bewilderness from here?
Patton inquired.
Yimo will show you the most direct way,
Eldenor said, motioning toward a nearby woodling with a stubby body and legs so long they looked like stilts.
Go in peace.
Patton looked back at Seth and the others.
Follow me.
Yimo started walking fast enough that the horses needed a trot to keep up. Seth stole several backward glances at the mob of woodlings and the colossal oak. None of the wooden figures followed them. As when they had followed the giant, their way through the woods did not seem like a path. The horses stayed at a trot, meaning they made more noise than earlier. They traveled a long distance in silence before Nox spoke.
I don't see any more woodlings.
There's Yimo, Seth pointed out.
Besides Yimo, Nox said.
Maybe they're all back with the Hamadryad, Kendra said.
Or working in a different part of the forest, Seth guessed.
The trees are louder here,
Tanu said.
Might be a reflection of us.
Seth looked and listened. The trees did sound creakier. He noticed a particular banyan with many aerial roots drooping down from convoluted branches where shadows seemed to gather thicker than elsewhere. He felt malevolence as he studied it, and it took an effort to look away.
A little quieter here, Seth said,
glancing periodically at the ominous tree until it was out of view. After some time, Yimo came to a halt and indicated the way ahead. Beyond where he stopped, there was undergrowth, and the trees were not so evenly spaced. The difference was remarkable. It was clear that Yimo intended to go no farther.
End of the line, Patton said, dismounting. We need to talk.
Chapter 23 The Bewilderness. Kendra climbed down from Glory, patting the mare in appreciation. There had been a tense feeling while they were moving through the sentient wood, but Glory had performed beautifully.
Yimo,
Patton said, accompanying his words with hand motions,
we appreciate your help.
The woodling gave a little bow and strode away on its long legs. Everyone huddled around Patton, including the mounts.
Our next step is tricky,
Patton said.
The Bewilderness is not directly protected from dragons.
No barriers? Seth asked.
Right, Patton said. But dragons do not venture there.
Why not? Kendra asked.
The Bewilderness is incredibly disorienting to many animals and magical creatures, Patton said. Dragons especially hate it. They get terribly dizzy and find the whole place deeply disturbing.
Will we get dizzy? Nox asked.
We shouldn't get dizzy, Patton said, but if we're not careful, we'll definitely get killed.
What's the danger? Seth asked.
Risen May dwells at the heart of the Bewilderness, Patton said. I can get no more specific than that. I have found her before, but I do not believe I can do so as a sting bulb. Only one of us should try.
Me, Seth said,
Don't be too hasty, Patton said. The person ought to be the one most likely to win Risen May's aid. Kendra's fairy kind status makes her the ideal candidate.
Okay, Kendra said.